burlesque performer Discharge describes herself as a nightmare of drag. Inspired by the wails of goth queen Diamanda Galas, who was forged in the fires of the AIDS crisis of the late 80s. Like many gals in her scene, Mix Dis cherishes her grassroots scene and feels at odds with the mainstreaming of drag as a result of the success of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Even if drag is going mainstream, there will always be folks to rock the system. Today, UK queen Discharge and her gal pal Ophelia Wilde join us in the home studio to talk about their counterculture roots as burlesque artists.
Plus, you know the election is serious when drag queens are telling their fans to vote.
Republicans warn of trouble if Democrats take over the House and prosecute Trump for his crimes.
And Chris Hemsworth and his personal trainer picked up a hitchhiker in Australia. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Unlock a delicious world of podcasting magic and listen to thousands of amazing shows at feastoffun.com/plus.
Our guest today is a queen for the creeple. All the way from Bristol in the UK, please welcome Discharge.
Tongue pop, death drop, yes. I can do none of those things.
What did you just say? Can you translate that to English?
Tongue pop, death drop, yes.
Oh.
I'm speaking in American drag lingo so everyone understands me. Yeah.
Can you pop your tongue?
No, this is a constant thing between me and Ophelia, that I cannot tongue pop at all. And every time I try to do it, I just sound ridiculous. And then Ophelia just busts it out and I'm like, great, cool,
amazing. Let's hear it, Ophelia.
Yeah, bring it over here.
Oh my god!
Ophelia Wilde is your trusty people servant.
Oh my god!
Absolutely not. Ophelia Wilde is my best friend, my sister at arms, renegade stripper, and the incredible neo-burlesque dancer, rising star of the UK scene, UK and European scene.
And you guys are both young, gorgeous people with great bodies, so I imagine that your performances involve you showing a lot of skin.
I mean, mine at the moment, actually not. I'm not doing a huge amount of stripping at the moment. I'm mainly singing. So, but Ophelia's work is incredible, and she's an amazing dancer who fuses like contemporary dance with classic burlesque and a whole load of other stuff to kind of create these really brilliant, emotive, intense acts. She's incredible.
Ophelia, amazing. Your dancing is not like the movie Burlesque with.
It is
Cher.
Not. No, that is not burlesque. That is not burlesque.
Can you do the wagon wheel watushi? Oh my god!
How are people who are sort of diehard, you know, burlesque traditionalists, or how would you describe like your relationship to this concept of burlesque?
To burlesque, I think this. I mean, obviously, it's such a variety of an industry, and
sure.
The classic of burlesque—that is what everybody thinks mm-hmm. of as burlesque. Mm-hmm. The fans and the beautiful Dita Von Teese, basically, mm-hmm. Which I hold dear to myself. You know, it's really important, and that's where it's come from. A lot of it,
sure.
But I also, I like that it delves into other areas, and it's something different. And everyone can own their own thing in burlesque.
Well, burlesque always seems, it's kind of like stripping in a way, but with a camp aesthetic.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Also, it is stripping, and mm-hmm. we are strippers, and I'm proud of that, but also it tells a story. You can tell a story via stripping. You can mm-hmm. tell a story but being proud of your sexuality and your body.
Depending on which way the tassels twirl. Is
exactly.
You're getting your props, right?
Exactly. Directional.
Well, it's like Vanessa Williams in Ugly Betty. She said, right. Hoard up, but make at fashion.
Exactly.
Or in your case, it's,
just tore it up.
Get in touch with your sexuality, but make it art.
Yes. Yeah.
And so
filthy.
The film Burlesque, you feel like misrepresented that art form.
Completely, yes.
How so?
Because it's mainstream, so they don't actually, there's no stripping mm-hmm. in
there's
it.
There's no sexuality or nudity.
There's no sexuality. It's just all fans and feathers and prettiness. And that's Shogo. That's great, but it's not burlesque. It's, I think mainstream, they try and get away with stripping mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it's still known as a, people aren't proud of it, I guess. People are, you know.
Well, and it was like the girls were out there lip syncing to things rather than just performing.
Exactly.
And then Christina comes and like, I'm going to sing. I'm noticing
something really interesting happening. And we had this discussion yesterday with James Mansfield about wrestling going mainstream and drag going mainstream and burlesque, as we're sort of conscious, going mainstream, is that there is this conscious discomfort or resentment or just rejection of the mainstreaming of this fringe culture. And Discharge, you guys are from Bristol, you have absolutely no interest, even though you're a working drag queen, you travel around the world, you go to like places like the Austin International Drag Festival. Yep. You have zero interest in RuPaul's Drag Race.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
And DragCon.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. As a working queen, like, there's a certain amount of information I have to hold to be kind of relevant. All of my references are completely irrelevant. I'm like, Diamanda Galas, totally current. And everyone's like,
son
what?
Son la prova, son la carne macelata, son la mierda de Dios.
Son el fecci del signore.
Sorry, Diamanda took over my body for a second.
I fully appreciate that. And it'll be Glossolalia, the house down boots.
I used to be much better at that. But.
I love her. I absolutely love her.
So you actually perform Diamanda Galas's music?
Yep. I'm performing her rendition of the Philox piece, Iron Lady, tonight.
You're
at the
singing
Cabaret.
Acoustically as Diamanda Galas.
Yeah.
Baby, you are a long lost cousin. I love you so much.
See, this is the thing. Like, when I got into drag, the reason, like, I saw people like Peaches Christ, Squeaky Blonde, Vin Santos, Phonique, Hoku Mama, all of these sorts of people, and I was like, oh, you can do drag and it can be really weird. And I was like, oh, there we go. And like, but as I said, like Drag Race, yes, I do have a certain tie to it, because in, you know, in this industry we do need to have, like, you need to kind of be tethered to that reality to a certain degree, but I'm not necessarily looking to that to be inspired. The performers I'm still looking at, you know, mainly are from burlesque, but also, you know, that kind of exists within the fringes of drag culture. It was always like the Divines. It was like the Wasp women from San Francisco. It was, you know, it was Squeaky. It was Peaches. It was, you know, all of
those
people.
Your art is a form of rebellion. You're a rebel with a cause.
Yep. I'm searching for renegade strip of freedom.
For people who may not be familiar with Diamanda Galas,
yes,
she was a performance artist and musician.
Yep.
From the late 80s.
Continues.
And continues. Yep. Dee Dee, we'll call her. She lost her brother, Dimitri, to AIDS.
Yes, she did.
And in the late 80s, and was moved by that experience to create music.
Yep. And she also, you know, she
with
was...
with a plague mass.
Yeah, and she was also... she was at one point, she was working as a sex worker. She contracted Hep C. She knew the stigma from two sides. So she saw what happened with her brother, you know, being raised Greek Orthodox, Catholic, and she saw a lot of the stuff to do with the way the church treated us and people with HIV. And then, you know, contracted something that made her part of, you know, a similar discourse at the same time. And, you know, she fought really hard. You know, there was a warrant for her arrest in New York City at one point, because she walked into, I can't remember the name of the church, but she walked into a church headed by a particular priest who like said that it was, you know, declared that we were getting our just desserts basically from the epidemic, and she was covered in blood and did it with ACT UP, and she demanded the head of the priest, and there was like a warrant for her arrest and stuff. I think it was, the case was eventually dismissed, but like, you know, she has We Are All HIV Positive tattooed on her knuckles. She's, you know, the body of her work, like the Plague Mass trilogy specifically, but then, you know, her work talking about genocide, with specifically the Armenian genocide, from the Defixionis Will and Testament record, and then the Vena Cava records and the Shrive performances discussing mental health and that sort of stuff. Like, I always really responded to her work. I find it really fascinating. And she was aggressively political, like, you know, and it made her greatly unpopular in a number of circles. Like,
she was the goth queen of her day.
She is the goth queen.
Well, and you know, since then, get to this in a second, but Diamanda Galas made a name for herself with this powerful image of walking half naked mm-hmm. onto the stage, wearing nothing but a skirt,
yep.
and covered head to toe in stage blood.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow it managed not to get on her fingers so she could play on the piano and wail with the amplitude of the speaker sound system.
Yeah, yeah.
Turned up so loud that they had jars of cotton
mm-hmm.
outside the doors of the concert hall so you yeah. could plug them in your ears so you wouldn't go deaf.
Yeah, yeah.
And since then, she reached such critical success. She was on the Arsenio Hall show performing with John Paul Jones and yeah. released an album.
Yep.
And she was criticized for that at the time as selling out.
Which is hilarious. She was such an impenetrable record.
Making music that necessarily didn't always have to deal with the AIDS crisis.
Yeah, but then saying that, you know, she was the work that she was doing with John Paul Jones during that time. That was a complete misnomer because she was doing stuff like, Devil's Rodeo and stuff like that. Which yes, it was about love, but then she had any number of points within that record that were specifically about attitudes towards, you know, the church and to do with conservatism and things like that. And you know, she is an artist. She can speak about her own experiences. You know, she's not just one particular thing. She can do any number of works. She's said multiple times, my work on to do with the epidemic is not over.
Sure.
And she's kind of started up again with some of those pieces. There's another piece called Das Fieberspital, which is based on a George Haim poem. And that's kind of like paying into that sort of stuff and talking about how treatment of patients and things like that. And that's, you know, so the work is still continuing.
And so for people who don't know who John Paul Jones is, he was the bassist
Led
for
Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You've been there! So you are sort of a drag performer, gender nonconforming artist who is very much inspired by Diamanda Galaz.
Diamanda, post-punk, blues, jazz musicians, and any number of that sort of stuff is kind of my bread and butter. Susie Sue, Nina Hagen, Einstürzende Neubauten, Lydia Lunch, you know, those sorts
you
of
love
groups.
Your 90s, huh?
I love my late 80s, early 90s, 76 yeah. as well, like okay. all the, you know, the Die Todliche Doris and, you know, Neue Deutsche Welle and stuff like that.
Why don't we have, our generation's answer to these extraordinary female artists? Like, it seems like they were forged in the fires of the AIDS crisis.
I think there's any number of particular, I think there's a number of performers right now who are like doing really interesting things, you know, on a commercial level, you have people like Sia, whose voice I absolutely love, but then like, you know, on a lower, not lower, but like more fringe culture level, there's a number of performers and artists that I look up to. In the Bristol scene, there's a brilliant band called Nasty Little Lonely who actually do a lot of work with me. They've done loads of backing tracks for me. Charlie Beddoes, she's a fucking powerhouse. She's an incredible performer, an incredible musician. And the work she's done with Nasty Little Lonely, making this like aggressive, industrial, bluesy rock performances are just phenomenal. And then there's any number of like performers out there who are making really unusual pieces of music and, you know, making art from their work and, you know, making political statements and stuff like that. So there's a number of performers that I still look up to in the contemporary culture, but the majority of my references are definitely cut from like post-punk, goth, blues, jazz, industrial, that kind of culture.
I mean, it's election day.
Yes, and here in the States.
Here in the United States. And, you know it's serious when Bianca Del Rio is telling you to go vote.
When she can climb.
All the drag queens are. There's actually an article out right now saying how political drag queens have become. But I always
in the
feel
last
like
five
it
minutes.
Should always have been. Always been, you know? So I think maybe people are just catching on.
Yeah.
Or the new kids who are kind of, because we have a lot of people that are very new to drag.
Sure.
Now this has kind of awoken them up.
Yeah,
and being
yeah.
like, oh, I have to be involved. But, you know, being a drag queen itself is just, it's a political act.
Being a drag queen, being a burlesque dancer, as Ophelia can tell you, you know, as I skirt into both, and it's part of my identity. Every time we take a stage as a queer person and embrace our body, embrace our voice and our sexuality, we're taking a political step. Even if that routine is very entertaining and very simple or very intimate or very grand or aggressive or whatever, every time we do that, we make a political statement. You know, I was with Judith Stein, the legendary stripper and activist and burlesque dancer, this weekend working in Boise, Idaho for Frankly Burlesque, which was a great damn show. and she was Vice. Saying, shout out to Frankly Frankie, who's a powerhouse of burlesque in Idaho. In fact, Frankly Frankie was the one whose show was shut down by undercover cops in Boise.
Oh, wow.
Because of the stupid nudity laws. And she fought back with the ACLU and has had major it's had major ramifications for the laws in that state.
So now you can just walk down the street naked in Boise?
Pretty
or what?
Much, yeah. That's literally what we did all weekend. We were like,
just like
do
Folsom
it.
In
yeah.
San Francisco.
We need more of that in this
yeah.
world.
But know? Like, yeah, this is why I think I respond so well to burlesque. Like when I kind of got involved within the burlesque scene, you know, I started working for Tuesday Laveau, who's the founder of Bristol Burlesque Festival, and I now co-produce it with her, and the Coochie Crunch event as well, which is like a quarterly event, was bi-monthly, now quarterly event. And it's it was a great eye-opener for me because I'd loved burlesque for a long time and I'd seen shows and I'd gone, you know, actually one of Ali Kat's first shows, I was actually at Ali Kat's first show, which I believe was run by Tuesday, and didn't know them. And then, like, you know, all this time later, I became the host and started co-producing with Tuesday. And, you know, we pride ourselves on making shows that are queer, weird, wild and wired. We're very much political beings because we can't not be in this day and age. It's extremely important to, if you've got stage time for that amount of time, make a statement. Mm. If I'm going to be on
but
stage
what about
for
my
2
brand?
Hours.
Go out, buy my merch, my drag queen
buy
merch
my merch,
website.
But then also, you know, you know, make a statement.
It makes me a little bit like want to set, if you could set, you know, drag queen merch on fire. Or just like this whole, and you know, we rely on selling t-shirts and merchandise.
And where do they get that?
At feastoffun.com /store. But it to me, it's like, it seems almost sometimes, God damn, these things are loud.
Just let them fly.
He's just twinkling.
It just feels like you want to set the house on fire when you see somebody who has so much access to a large audience be so caught up in monetizing that fame and that success that's built on the shoulders of people who have died and mm-hmm. suffered.
Yep.
And to me, it's a huge...
Well, you mean like Dolly Parton refusing to be political? Well, refusing to come out against Trump?
It is interesting with Dolly Parton because she's like... She always uses it like, well, I just think there's another boobs in the White House. You know, so, and it's like...
She's Lady
uses
Bunny
that
now.
Boobs in the White House.
Well, they're both from Tennessee, right?
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah. But, although, you know, certainly...
Buddy's from Chattanooga.
Ah, so really?
Same with Leslie Jordan. That's why they kind of talk alike.
Leslie Jordan.
Leslie Jordan was a waiter in a restaurant in Chattanooga.
Yeah.
And Lady Bunny was a busboy there. Bus person there. Yes.
I wonder if like Lady Bunny ever used the line "Beverly Leslie is a homosexual" during that period.
Probably not, because this would have been like, you know, the 60s.
Years before. But yeah,
It just to me, it's like it. There's a lot of responsibility that we have as artists to sort of understand our history and to speak on that, mm-hmm. you know. And to me, it's like, you know,
well, especially as it's being erased constantly.
But there's another angle to drag, is that drag is built on failure. And it's this idea that we can fuck up.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you always hear RuPaul saying, don't fuck it up, but it's like drag is about making terrible mistakes.
Yeah, but RuPaul knows about that, considering how constantly he's attacking women who do drag, attacking AFAB people who do drag, attacking, you know, stealing from the trans community and then making really crappy, crass jokes about them all the time. And it's like, you know, I'm like literally writing my death sentence right now for this industry.
Well, do you feel like speaking out against that is closing opportunities for you as a performer?
I don't, you know what, I don't care.
Well, I'd like to think that, you know, I think that Rue has some, you know, seriously fucked up views, but
yes,
I'm
does.
Really hoping that there's room for growth there.
I would hope so.
In other parts, he's just such a star and just shines and is brilliant.
Yeah.
So hopefully some of that brilliance will move over into those other parts.
I would love it. You know, I mean, like, I still respond very much to, like, RuPaul's early years, like, during the Club Kid years. I loved his, like, his punk record, Sex Freak, is actually kind of really, he talks about it really poorly, but it was really interesting. like, especially listening to some of those, the bits on that record, there's some really odd choices that are quite interesting. But, you know, my thing with Ru is that he's, you know, he knows where his money's coming from and he understands that, but, like, he's constantly just talking about, he keeps paying into the misogyny of the scene, hence why he's always using things like the term fishy, which is completely ridiculous. We shouldn't be using that. We shouldn't be using that terminology anymore. It's disgraceful. I keep getting frustrated with this. I've written an article about it. It's been published a couple of times. It's got a little minor viral thing called Serving Fish, How I Stopped Reinforcing a Negative Image of Women's Bodies. And, you know, it's this whole thing of, like, using that kind of terminology is constantly denigrating to women. And it's like, you're always talking about, like, lifting women up, and then you're going to use terminology that completely denigrates them. What are you doing? What are you thinking?
Well, usually, you know, like, a lot of this... consciousness or unconscious vocabulary is stemming from just a lack of awareness.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, when we tell people not to use a word and not give them alternatives, they're kind of like kids who are playing with the car keys.
Yeah.
You can't take the car keys away from the kid. You got to give them another toy to play with.
To work with that, yeah. That on, you know, how about femme? You know, just like, and there's any number of ways of not doing that. It's just pure laziness. And the other
like
thing that,
what I like to say when I dress up in drag is like, I'm just a woman. Yeah. I'm just a simple woman who wants to love the world and be loved in return.
By but all like, of the world.
I mean, me and Ophelia have had this conversation any number of times. There's so much, like, drag misogyny is a real problem. And they do know that this is a thing. Like, Alaska Thunderfuck, I remember watching one of the Bro-Alaska videos where they did, like, a vocabulary thing. Like, it was drag vocabulary, and she would say a word, and then Corey would repeat back what he thought that meant. That word meant.
Corey and his brother?
Brother, yeah. And then, so... He said fishy, and Alaska literally says, yeah, it's kind of gross, it means this, it's kind of gross, and admits that it's gross and we shouldn't be using it. And then 2 weeks later, releases Stun with Gia Gunn, which literally starts with the phrasing. And you're like, come on! And then goes to the place.
Gia Gunn called herself a tilapia queen, fresh off the boat.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh, God damn it.
Ophelia, you're giggling over here.
Do you find fish very offensive?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I mean, like... Again, I'm not an easily offended person at all because I really don't care.
I shouldn't say offensive. I hate that word. Harmful. Yeah. Do you think it's harmful?
Yeah, I do, because especially with the drag, you know, the drag industry and for women as well, it's something that should be really powerful and we should be together, you know, and there's so much. If we can fight together, then, you know, it'd be incredible. Mm-hmm. But as you said, that is a fishy as a term of, yeah, it's rude. It's, you know, and that's as a woman, you know, growing up, throughout your life, that is something that you hear a lot. You know, that's little boys in the school, the playground, or, you know, that's kind of a thing, you know, and you have lots of different fishy terms for you. Yeah. But, and so it's kind of like, it feels offensive. It's like, okay, so, you know, you want to be with us in a certain way, but then not at all in another, you know?
Well, I guess, you know, you can argue in favor of that word is that it's about reclaiming.
Owning, yeah.
And owning things. And certainly a lot of cisgendered women who have been called that word in a negative sense, giving them the power to use it if they want to, is a grand thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Agree?
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. Like, slut shaming. Slut is a word to reclaim, and it's definitely that kind of thing. And it is, but I feel, you know, from a... It's a personal. Yeah. It's not. It is obviously a personal thing, but it's a physical thing about your body. It's a, you know, we have a lady garden. That is why it's called it's fishy. You know, maybe ask the people that
it's
have those things.
There.
It's salty down
and
there,
so
right?
It's a bit of the sea,
right?
And so you can kind of see that it gets close,
right?
And but then it is denigrating.
I totally
listen,
get it.
All fish doesn't smell bad. Right? I eat sushi.
Exactly.
I've eaten pussy.
Good. Yeah. Right. Exactly. I think,
well,
you know,
we need more words like oceanic.
You know, oceanic.
Or maybe just stay away from the oceany bit. You know,
mermaidish.
There's so many other words. You know,
seashell.
But, you know, I think if you don't have... Well, I mean, it's hard, but, I mean, if you... It's the same. I wouldn't, for a man's body, I wouldn't say anything against it because it's not mine and it's not something that I know about. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you'd feel if I said anything about your male body. Mm. I wouldn't, you know, because I don't understand
when
that.
When you read Cosmopolitan magazine and it gives sex advice to women...
Oh, my God, right?
It's basically saying, take the man's dick and put it in a blender.
Yeah.
You're like,
he'll love that.
Yeah, he'll love it. It's great. Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah, I just... just think, yeah, if you don't have that bit, maybe you can't, you know, maybe think about asking the people that do have those areas and those bits.
Florence and the Machine says it's always darkest before the dawn.
Yeah.
And she's talking mostly about breaking up with someone in the song. But I feel like, you know, Shake It Off. Taylor Swift is Shake It Off. Get that devil off your back. Yeah. And right now, it does feel like the world is falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what's going to happen, but certainly, like, it's predicted that Democrats are going to take over the House.
We're hoping.
There's a slim chance that they'll take over the Senate. And already Republicans are saying, well, a similar thing happened with Bill Clinton when
Trying to make this about the money, and they're trying to say that it's going to be like a disaster for the financial market.
Well, they're saying actually that it's politically going to cost Democrats to go after Trump, even though Trump has openly admitted to various crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Mueller's investigation, which inevitably will come to a close.
I think on Wednesday or something, right?
Really?
I think something.
A week from today.
That's not possible, surely. There's still so much to do on that.
Well, you know, they're going to put forward some indictments, some information. Right. And what we choose to do so as a society is going to speak a lot about us.
Yeah.
And it is always darkest before the dawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I'm curious to hear you guys speak about, you know, as non-conforming rebels, artists from the UK with Brexit just days away as well. What do you make of this? Like, I know art is a way to speak to this crisis that we're facing, but, you know, is there anything else we can do?
I mean, galvanizing with your local community is the main thing. So making sure that people are informed, if you're unsure as to which way to vote, who to support, you know, go visit the ACLU website, go and check in on all that information, because they have so much information available to mm-hmm. you know, to help you with that. Listen to your community leaders, go out into the queer community, speak to people, find out what's going on, you know, find out who's working for us and not against us, you know, learn about our history, learn about where we've come from. You know, talk about Stonewall, talk about that sort of stuff. Make sure that the younger generations are being educated, because that's something that is extremely powerful. One of the things that I find absolutely ridiculous within both the UK and US is that our history isn't being taught in schools. Obviously, there's a huge drive to keep us out of schools because they don't want us to be, you know, vocal. They don't want us to be visible, and we have to be visible.
We had an opportunity to be counted in the census,
right?
And the category of same-sex households, mm-hmm. gay and lesbian identifying or transgender mm-hmm. identifying, bisexual identifying Americans, mm-hmm. That was all removed by the Trump administration.
Of course it was. Well, didn't they remove any reference to trans identities from the official website and stuff within days?
All government papers and everything. What do you say to somebody like a drag queen like Elaine Lancaster, who's very proud to be a Trump supporter? This is somebody who works in LGBT bars.
Continues?
I don't know.
I think she lost a lot of her gigs. She's from Miami, Florida.
Oh, yeah. No, she lost everything.
Yeah.
She lost pretty much everything.
I would assume somebody out there is still going to hire her somewhere. Because there are
people make their choices. That's
fringe,
fine.
Gay people that I see on Facebook that are Trump supporters. And for whatever reason, I hate to judge, but they all have weird plastic surgery. They all look like they've
done
something.
So in other words, they have a lot of white privilege and money. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Shock horror that those people
But a lot of them aren't even necessarily white. There's quite a few of them, or maybe they want to be white or something.
Latino. There's women who proudly say Trump can grab my pussy. What do you say to those individuals?
I mean, there's only so much you can do to educate ignorance, but I don't understand where, like, I've had conversations with people before who, you know, to relate it back to the UK, sort of seen, you know, young queens that I've seen come up who vote conservative and who said, you know, Margaret Thatcher, she wasn't that bad. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, literally, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Has the bar been lowered so much that Margaret Thatcher is now seen as sort of a...
No, they're just like, Margaret Thatcher was a disaster for our country. She ruined us.
Who was the queen you said looked like Margaret Thatcher the other day? We were watching something and you're like, oh my god, she looks like Margaret Thatcher. Who was that?
Yeah, it was some drag queen, I don't remember.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I should have written it.
That is not a flattering representation. Don't remember that name.
It was the guy from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It was a tribute to Rocky Horror Picture Show.
The guy who played Giles?
Yes.
Anthony Stewart Head.
Yes.
So he was cast in this horrifying tribute to Rocky Horror Picture Show, and he's dressed as Dr. Frankenfurter. He looks a little more like Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, poor. Like, poor Anthony Stewart Head.
A little bit of a goth kind of.
Oh, no.
Whatever. Yeah.
That's horrifying.
We'll show you a picture, and you'll be like,
I don't think I want to see this.
It's horrifying. So,
I think, like, I mean, I've had conversations with people. But I had a conversation with a young queen a few years ago who was like openly conservative in our local community, and I was just like, I don't understand what you're talking about. And she's like, oh, you know, blah blah blah, and I was like, this, you know, I pulled up voting records, I pulled up this sort of stuff, and I was like, how can you deny this? And she's like, oh, I didn't really know any of that. And I'm like, see, that's the thing. What you mean is you're upwardly mobile white conservative, and you have no idea about. I am furious that you would ever... Oh, God, it's true.
Oh, God, it is.
Right?
Oh, right? Anthony, no. Right? Fire that makeup artist immediately. Oh, no.
Fausto has been on a Rocky Horror jag for the past couple weeks.
Okay.
And he's been listening to the original soundtracks, the different versions. He's been watching everything online that has to do with Rocky Horror.
I'm going in deep.
He's going in really deep.
Well, as a child, so just a quick aside here. Mm-hmm. As a child, I lived in off of Ponce de Leon Avenue in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Right.
And, you know, going home from school or visiting our family members or going home from the mall or the movie mm-hmm. theaters, we would drive past this hotel of ill repute.
Oh.
And my
Was
mother,
I there?
And and my mother and my father would always be like, those are where, you know, the sad women and sad men spent time with each other. And as a child, I thought, you know, a child's perspective of what a sex worker is not going... I thought it was like a film noir kind of thing.
Yeah,
like, you know, a helpless dame comes in and is like, tell me about it, lady. Oh, I hope that you can save me.
Well, that's the narrative that's been pushed for so many years. So, yeah, that makes sense.
So I had a very romantic notion with what a sex worker was when I was a child. And I thought about the fishnets and the... So when, as an 18-year-old, I saw the Rocky Horror Picture Show, to me, the grittiness of the Transylvanians, of Dr. Frankenfurter, of the aesthetic of the show, was very romantic.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's influenced me very much as a queer person, as a non-binary person, throughout my whole life in the art that I make. And part of it is this romantic fascination with what a sex worker is.
Right.
And so I wondered, like, what were the actual people who played these Transylvanians really like?
Mm-hmm.
Were they just people that you were hauled over from a bus station or
actors hired, you know?
Yeah. I guess there's an agency called the Ugly Agency that cast the Transylvanians.
Is it Ugly International?
Ugly International. Yeah. And it's still in business.
Yes. Yeah, I believe so.
And so they have to be ugly?
No, it's just like,
actors.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Daria.
Yeah, Ruby. Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. The amazing burlesque dancer from Bristol, Ruby Daria, is part of UGLY. Yeah.
So. UGLY. So, I guess just really quickly, and I want to do a whole show about this next year for Halloween, but, the commercial success of Pink Flamingos, John Waters film, led 20th Century Fox to want to capture that lightning in the bottle.
Yeah.
And to me, I was like, Pink Flamingos made a lot of money, I guess, at that time period for what they
it
for
caused
what it
so
was.
Much outrage as like a touring production, not production, but you know, like during the tour that John put on, that it was like it became like his big commercial. That's how he was able to then finance larger productions, wasn't it?
So they had this. Richard O'Brien did the stage production of the Rocky Horror Show.
Yeah.
That was a commercial success, and 20th Century Fox. And Sherman, the director of the stage play, they wanted to get together and make a film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they, for very little money, like 1.4 million or so.
Yeah, yeah.
We're able to put it together. And part of the reason that it's so awkward is because a lot of the performers that were in the film were put in at the last minute, including Richard O'Brien. Mm-hmm. So in the original stage production, Richard O'Brien doesn't play Riff Raff.
No.
And Little Nell isn't in it as well. And mm-hmm. so they're not as comfortable as Tim Curry is.
Right.
And just a quick aside to wrap this up, a lot of the Transylvanians were cast later on in the Star Wars film.
Yeah.
And it was the somewhat the success of being able to turn this grassroots phenomena into mm-hmm. a science fiction film that got 20th Century Fox open to the idea of funding Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And from what I'm reading here, some of the cast members from Ugly Agency were cast as extras or stand-ins in the first Star Wars film.
Right.
So especially that tall one who's eating cake, you know, he was a stand-in for Chewbacca and Darth Vader in the first Star Wars film.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And so I guess, like, you know, and certainly that aesthetic has influenced you guys very much. Is this this romantic idea of what a sex worker is and does, which, you know, for us who've also done sex work, is very different.
Well,
it's not the reality. Ophelia, you're shaking your head here. Yeah.
But I also think it's as a woman for society, it's that it's sensationalized because there's always that a female, you know, if you're a sex worker, it's because you need a man to come and save you. There's always that Prince Charming. It's like Pretty Woman. It's the same for me. Mm. That's why I always think the same. Sex work is still work. You know, we are still working. It's a job. We work, you know, and it's hard work.
Yeah.
Excuse the pun, but you know, it can be.
Or soft work.
Or whatever, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's, yeah, it's for...
Only if you're good at it.
Right.
I like what Roseanne Barr, before she was, as a comedian, she was also a sex worker. And she said that, you know, she'd tell jokes and then she'd do guys out in the cars. Mm. And she said she always liked giving blowjobs better than eating ass. Because with a blowjob, you know when you're done. But when you're eating ass, how do you know when you're done eating an ass? You know?
I like that one. She knows where it's at. She knows. Yeah.
Yeah. She did at least at one
point. At one point in time, she was a goddess. Nowadays,
no. Let's read Lady Bunny's status update. So the reason Lady Bunny sometimes comes across as regressive on Facebook, making the presumption that both parties are the same, or that it was, you know, the reason we had Trump was because of Hillary Clinton.
And the Democratic Party and all those stupid shenanigans. Part of it, she's right.
I mean, that's a slight oversimplification, to say the least. Mm. I mean, I think it's very interesting to isn't it an odd thing to blame women for Trump? Like, don't you find that really odd, rather than blaming the culture of toxic masculinity that we have in general, that it's suddenly so easy, then someone to blame women for that? That just speaks volumes to me. I'm not saying that's what Bunny's done,
but it's distressing
specifically,
to see
I think
that
that's
the
disturbing.
Kavanaugh hearings, as opposed to harming the Republicans' chances on today's election, it actually helped them.
Well, they want to control. The part of their philosophy is to control women. And if they have to control women through sexual violence, then, you know, so be it.
So Lady Bunny writes, if you're going to vote, spend a lot of time and bring your umbrella in New York City. There are long lines in the West Village, and prepare for chaos.
Want people to vote?
I was given a ballot and I filled it out. But when I went to scan it, my ballot was rejected by the scanner, saying that I overvoted, i.e. I'd chosen too many candidates. So I had to grab another one, and my area's table told me to fill out the ballot straight down. This is nonsense, because that means you have to vote straight ticket down one column. And if you favor progressives, Cuomo, Gillibrand, and other dams are listed both in the Democrats and its Working Families Party's categories in different columns. Voting for them in the Working Families Party signals to these politicians that this voter would like to see them act more like progressives. So my ballot was rejected again for selecting too many candidates, and they told me that I can have one more try. Three's the limit. Third one was rejected because of the bad advice given to me by the table of the district. Then I was told that I was needed to fill out a ballot and by an affidavit by a helpful lady who rolled her eyes and said she would never design such a confusing ballot. Should this happen to you, you'll need at least four numbers of your social security or a state driver's license or a state non-state driver's ID.
This is all good information.
This is good information,
With this much confusion, I'd just bring your ID anyways in case some glitch that's registered.
Who would go and vote without ID? Why would you walk around the streets of New York City
without
ID?
I wouldn't take my ID like on the street.
I take my ID with me when I walk the dog every time. Oh, God, you never know what's going to happen.
Oh, God, no. I wouldn't.
Really?
No.
You wouldn't walk around with ID on you?
No, absolutely not. I'll lose it. I have barely any idea where I am.
How are they going to identify your corpse if you don't have ID?
I mean, I'm already a corpse. What else can I say?
Literally,
the life drained out of me a long time ago.
You have on your left shoulder a queen for the creeple.
Yes. Done by Stetson.
Which has, you know, the bleeding Rocky Horror font.
Yep.
Creeple.
Mm-hmm.
And can you sort of tell us about the meaning behind that?
Well, that's like, I mean, that was kind of a commemorative one. It was on my third U.S. tour, third U.S. tour, proper actual decent tour, like going to multiple cities.
Yeah.
So that one was done by Stella Sin in Boise, Idaho. And it was kind of like, we were riffing on a kind of a pattern and a joke based on Bob the Drag Queen's Queen for the People. And I was like, Bob the Drag Queen may be a queen for the people, but I am a queen for the creeple. You know? And it was just a stupid joke, but it was a commemorative thing for the tour. But and it's, you know, because this arm is all going to, once it's finished, will all be like, is all very much to be witchcraft themed and, you know, all about queerness and witchcraft. Hence, you know,
is that your spiritual belief?
To a degree, yes.
Have you been watching Sabrina on Netflix?
I have watched Sabrina on Netflix.
Yes.
I know I shouldn't be annoyed by it, but I still really wanted Salem to be the dry cat, and I was like, come on! But he wasn't, so that's fine. I'm letting sleeping cats lie.
Spoiler alert, Salem doesn't really speak. Yeah, I mean, she talks to Salem as though he is speaking to her, but it's not the same kind of, you know, it's not the jokes like they have in the TV version.
Fridion, Sabrina! You know? Why are they doing this to me?
I still can't say Friday. I generally say Fridia after this stupid. Yes, he's like, he is a voting episode. They're voting for in the other realm, and I'm so sorry for anybody who's listening to this ridiculous conversation. but like, there's a thing where like, basically they're all trying to campaign, and no one is sure which way to vote and everything. And then turns out that Salem's one's vote, the one that Salem wants to win, is actually won, and he's super excited. He's waving this little flag, and it just says, welcome to Fridia. That's their only platform. It's super stupid, but it's always stuck with me. So I'm like, welcome to Fridia.
Well, are you liking the Netflix series? I did quite enjoy it.
There's a few problems with it. I've seen quite a lot. There's quite a few interesting articles about the sort of misogynoir of it, which is quite interesting.
The misogynoir?
Yeah. They've painted it. It's another thing of like painting narratives of black women as being aggressive you know, and all that sort of stuff, which is really interesting. Actually, the articles I've seen written are really fascinating, and it's very correct. Like, you can see it, like, they draw parallels between that and then what happened in American Horror Story with the Coven series and that sort of stuff, and the way that was all portrayed, and the way sort of black women are portrayed within the media, particularly within the realms of like occultic and witchcraft and that sort of stuff. Like, there's a whole
can't blame black women, just be black women.
Well, some people are complaining that they're not black enough, that every black person on Sabrina is very light skin, and they're not, there's not like a really black person. One of my black actor friends complaining about that.
Well, it just, I think when we see diversity and representation, it just always feels like it's the issue is not necessarily the casting or what we see in front of the lens. It's behind the lens. It's the writers. It's the producers.
Writers,
it's the
directors. And directors.
And if we could have diversity there, then a lot of this stuff, ridiculous stuff, would go out the window.
I mean, who would have thought that if you stopped making all of the executives and producers and casting directors and all of these people straight white men, that maybe that wouldn't happen. Shock horror.
The guy who wrote Sabrina, we actually had on the podcast years ago, he wrote a play called Good Boys and True. And we interviewed him about his play, and then he ended up working on the Archie comics and then writing Riverdale and then and writing this. So you know, he's quite an accomplished writer at this point.
But he's not an avowed Satanist.
Not that I'm aware of now. But I really like how they invoke like the Dark Lord and like how he's very much of
which is not the same as Satanism.
Like a cartoon as a kid, so it wasn't Gotham, like they didn't really go there. She was a cute little witch. You know, there wasn't all this like
I'm not so au fait with the comics, I've got to admit. I just love the stupid Melissa Joan Hart sitcom. I could watch Salem all day.
She turned out to be a Republican.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Oh, God damn it. I mean, sorry. I should have known.
Sorry. We can put a curse on her, though.
Well, you know, she's, to be fair, she's barely working, so, you know. She actually appeared in Bristol a little while ago. Did you see that?
What's the drag scene like in Bristol?
We've got a really interesting scene. There's, I mean, as I say, I kind of scope between the burlesque and the drag scenes. I run, so I co-produced Bristol Burlesque Festival in Coochie Crunch, which was founded by Chuzo Lavoe. And then I also run my own night called Disgraceful Behavior, which is a political, aggressive dark political cabaret, which mixes drag with burlesque, circus, and cabaret in vaudeville. There's also a really awesome event called Brizzle Boys, which is a drag king cabaret, and that works out of the same one. There's also Category Is, which is another drag night, and Wig in a Box Promotions, which is run by Claire Lowe.
Now, most of the drag is, you know, talking to queens from the UK, they often said, like, the tradition of drag in the UK is people actually singing and not so much lip-syncing.
Yeah.
Do you see that changing?
Is it? There's a huge diversity within the drag scene now. Like, there's a huge amount of stuff. That there's live singers, there's lip-syncers, there's a whole mixture of different styles. And it's, you know, it's the same in the US. You know, there's a huge amount of different styles. You know, it's the same within burlesque. You know, we have any number of different styles to fit the mood and to fit the realm, because there's so many different bodies and voices.
But I think here in the States, it was traditionally has always been drag. It's been a lip sync kind of thing, whereas in the UK, not necessarily.
I mean,
so
we have like, pantomime dames and that sort of stuff, and we have a long tradition of that. But like,
I mean, the biggest problem is just the sound system in bars. You know, when I was a musician, drag queen, it was hard to perform in places. They're like, you need a microphone?
Yeah. And like, I mean, to be fair though, I remember doing a theater gig, I will not say which, in the UK, and I literally just said I was doing a cover of Let My People Go, the Galas variation of Let My People Go, I just said to the sound tech, who was a theater sound tech, I was like, can you just give me a little bit of warm reverb? And he was like, what?
Oh no.
Jesus. I was like,
reverb. You want effects?
Like, just reverb.
No, honey, it's cold.
This was like an insanely big theater, like with a proper lighting rig and decent, a great sound system. And I was like, yeah, you know, like, you know, reverb. And he was like, what? Fully had no idea what I was talking about. The second night, he was like, oh, I've got the reverb. And I'm like, cool, I'm lip syncing tonight. Mm-hmm. That's great. Thanks. That was last night.
you're on your way to the Austin International Drag Festival.
Headlining Austin International Drag Festival.
And you went to the first one.
Yep.
And you met a lot of queens soon. You guys kind of formed your own house of garbage. Is that what it is?
So we're not a house. We're the garbage family.
Okay.
First time I went out to Austin, I met the incredible Emma Sis and Alexandria and Mamie Graves, and who's from Dallas. And we just kind of like, we saw each other. We were like, oh, you people look like insane people that we would know, you know, as this often happens. And then it kind of, we sort of like kept in touch and then sort of saw each other the next year and started hanging out. And then it kind of grew. And then Ryan Stecken from Berlin came over and then... And like, you can spook like who you're gonna be like. Oh, you! I know that I'm gonna be friends with you.
Sure, I know the garbage family really works for you guys because I remember hanging out with you at National Drag Festival at Oil Can Harry's, and one of the guys was, I think he was making out with some guy and started spinning him around or something, and then he ended up ass and into a garbage can.
Oh, okay, that wasn't us. That was Cheyenne O'Shea.
But you were there.
I was fully there. That's Cheyenne. Cheyenne, please tell me you're listening to this. So Cheyenne O'Shea, is a queen from Southend-on-Sea in just outside of London, and she's a great friend of mine, just a good sister of mine, good Judy.
But she's not garbage.
She's not garbage family. No, she's not part of the garbage fam. But she is. She's an amazing queen, very talented and completely insane. Literally upside down in a garbage can. I remember looking around, there was like a group of us and we were all like, oh cool, that's happening. We were too busy inside because we were walking around giving tips to Emma Sis and we kept making puns on Emma Sis, so we kept going like, when Emma gets the money, Emma gets tips, Emma tips. And she was getting furious. I remember her like handing us, we were like handing her the dollar bills, and like there's me, Ryan, Harley and Maymay, and she's literally looking at us and she goes, I fucking hate you guys. And she just walks up. And I was like, yeah. Love you. Emphasis, I'm so sorry.
So being a family with people in different cities, yeah. you guys, I guess, get to crash in each other's pads.
Yeah.
Is that basically what it boils down to? And performing yeah. each other's shows.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I've Ryan has come over and performed for me for Disgraceful. Yeah, actually, Ryan headlined the first Disgraceful Behavior. Ophelia is the first burlesque performer to become part of the Garbage Fam, as in like straight burlesque performer as opposed to like drag and burlesque. Like Maymay and I both perform drag and burlesque. So there's like it's a mixture of us. So there's Emesis from Austin and Alexandria Van Cartier, who's a pageant performer and is part of the House of Van Cartier. And you've got Ryan.
That
Stecken.
Seems unlikely that a pageant queen with the last name Van Cartier would be part of a garbage family.
We are interdisciplinary, and trust me when I say our souls beauties. Are garbage.
Blessed are the booger queens, for they shall inherit the crown.
Exactly. Yeah. It will be held together by duct tape, and it will smell a bit, but it will have it. It'll be ours.
Well, every great entertainer starts with humble origins.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's like, I learned how to sing in the church.
Yeah, and we'll end there as well.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, we'll end there. I don't know if we can really climb out of that. Like, we're blossoming, but monstrously.
Well, what do you guys, since we're taping this just, you know, hours before the election results are announced. I'm kind of curious to hear about you guys. Before we get into that, because it's very heavy, okay. I want something a little bit lighter and sexier. Chris Hemsworth.
Okay.
Ooh. The sexier of the Hemsworth brothers.
Probably the sexiest. I don't know. Liam's pretty sexy, too, but Chris has that size.
Yeah, we were saying,
what size are we talking about?
He's like a monster, right? Like, he just looks like a massive man.
Right. Well, he's Thor, isn't he? Right.
He lifts weights to look like Thor, and he trains with his personal trainer, and they're driving around Australia, and a hitchhiker was like... This sounds like a porn. Right?
It does.
Right.
This is the beginning of like,
we're
fully on board with this right
Please
now.
Keep going.
And they pulled it. They picked up the hitchhiker, and I guess the hitchhiker took a bunch of photos and sold it to the tabloids. And
oh,
it's
that's
like,
amazing.
So Chris Hemsworth, if you're hitchhiking in Australia, do it because
he might pick you up. Or if you see an old guy with a little pencil thin mustache, hitchhiking, it might be John Waters.
Yeah,
he hitchhiked across the country.
Did you read that book, Caustic?
I didn't, but
it's
I read parts.
So
of it.
Good.
That's
Caustic
really fun.
Is hilarious. Hilarious because he does it in three parts.
Okay.
So his best case scenario, his worst case scenario where he dies, and then his actual experience of working on the road. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating. The best case scenario actually has like a brilliant and really unbelievable. I cried my eyes out reading it. It's this really touching moment where he gets picked up and he can't place why he knows this person. They've got this really odd cadence to their voice, and they're being driven, and as they're driving, he kind of like, it's like, something seems really familiar about you. And she goes, I know, John. Mailbox, passing lady, da 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 da, and it's Edith Massey. And she's like, I didn't really die. I just needed to get away from everything. And he goes back to a store that she's got, and like, he took, like, the affection with which he discusses Edith Massey and like the way he talks about it. I was bawling by the end of it. And it was just like, it was so sweet.
Gone too soon.
Oh, Edith Massey is a national treasure.
But those Dreamlanders all went too soon, you know?
Well, Mink Stoll is still with us.
The thing about, like, because we just taped a Cooking with Drag Queens, and Mink Stoll's, I can't say too much about it, but it's coming soon. And Mink Stoll's it's about Peaches Christ, her relationship to art and life. And Mink Stoll's part of it. And so we got the pleasure once again to hang out with Mink Stoll. But she's such a different person. Mm. Interpersonally than she is on stage screen, that it's so easy to forget that this is that same, I wouldn't suck your dick if there was oxygen in your balls and I was suffocating.
And she drives Uber in Baltimore, so if you're in Baltimore, you might someday get picked up by Mink Stoll.
Oh my God, I would die to be picked up by Mink Stoll in every possible fashion.
She's just so dumb, and she also doesn't like the word fishy.
Yeah.
It was faggot. She didn't like the word faggot. But she probably doesn't like fishy either.
Yeah, she was like, it stopped the whole conversation. She's like, do not use that word in front of me.
Well,
okay. So, Bohemian Rhapsody is out in theaters.
Have you guys seen it?
No.
Like I said, the biggest shock of the film was Freddie Mercury as bisexual. Like, a lot of people just think of Freddie Mercury as this tragic figure who died of AIDS because he sucked too many dicks, you know?
Right, right.
But he was deeply in love with this woman who he gave his estate, who he credits as saving his life, you know?
Yeah.
And that song won't... You know, Somebody Find Me Somebody to Love was kind of a love song to his ex-wife.
Right.
And so we see that portrayed in the film, and just critics, everybody's like, Freddie Mercury was not bisexual. He was not in love with a woman. What is this?
You know? Well, they say they overplayed it, they underplayed everything else. Yeah, he underplayed all his queerness. They said that he had sex with lots of guys. He had many lovers, and all that kind of stuff is under the cover, like, whatever. So part of me is like, I want to see it, but part of me, I just don't want to see it because I think that they erased a lot of his queerness.
I heard that Sacha Baron Cohen left the production because they were trying to not focus on his partying and stuff like that. But also from the way I'd heard some of the discussions of that, it also sounded like Sacha Baron Cohen wanted to go into a really sensationalist production, which is like, oh, well, just scam off us more then. Cool.
Well, Sacha, from what I understand, when he was talking about the production, he was talking to the band members, and he said the story they wanted to tell is how this band stayed together kept going after Freddie died. He's just like, you guys don't get it.
Oh, right,
nobody cares about you guys. They don't. I mean, you do care about anybody else in Queen.
Yeah,
no,
sure.
You care about Freddie Mercury.
Well, everyone cares about Brian May, but that's the UK. Yeah.
The other band members in Queen, bless their heart, great musicians, but they're so boring. Even actors playing them in a film aren't memorable.
Yeah.
Like, you can't even remember them.
Oh, my God, I'm fully cackling now.
So, election night. Hours away, gloom and doom, or there's light at the end of the tunnel.
What do you guys think is going to happen?
I hope beyond hope that the Democrats take it. I want them to flip the House, take back that control, send that message that these asshole Tea Party Republicans don't get to direct the course of history any further. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that what's been happening, the furious lying that Trump has been doing. What was this stupid 6, thing?
6,000 lies they've said.
Well, he literally lied like 2 days ago, didn't he, on the campaign trail? Like, he was saying that they're going to push through this massive tax cut. stupid fucking sassy hands. And do this massive tax cut for the middle class. And I was like, and he was like, we're going to do it through just before the election. I'm like, that's not possible. You're not in session.
Yeah.
That is not possible. You freaking liar. But I'm hoping that, you know, that people see the light, and that, you know, I have hope. I have hope for the community.
I have hope too.
Ophelia Wilde.
I have hope too. Hope, ever hopeful, always ever hopeful. But
yeah,
I mean,
well, you guys are about to face Brexit, and before we started taping, your major concern was a collapse of the British economy.
Yes, hugely. We're already. All Brexit has done is identify our very huge culture of small island mentality.
Mm-hmm.
We are very much like that. Unfortunately, now because of that, we are going to be left alone on our small island. And we're going to be... It's going to make everything, for me and Dis, for performing abroad, it's going to be nigh on impossible.
Yeah.
Because
you can't go to the continental Europe anymore, or what?
Yeah. We'll have to have visas. Yeah.
Yeah,
visas for everything, and rigorous checks. And because also, I mean, the rest of Europe now hate us.
Yeah,
rightly so.
Yeah,
because we've gone. Oh, we don't need you guys anymore. We don't need. We're fine on our own. We're not.
No.
Just for the record, we're not.
Yeah, we're not.
We're really not. Right. But yeah, so they're going to make, and you know, again, rightly so, they're going to make things really difficult for us. As in, exporting. It's going to everything's going to escalate financially.
I feel bad for the soybean farmers. Well, not that bad because they voted for Trump. But soybean exports have dropped almost practically 100%. They've been eviscerated, and that market's never coming back to Asian markets. So American soybean farmers have lost half the world, or even more so, in their exports.
Mm.
Of course they're like, Trump's like, let's give them a socialist money. You know,
right.
It's a ultimate in hypocrisy. As Florence and the Machine says, shake it out, vote them out. It is always darkest before the dawn. It's very likely that the House of Representatives will be given back to taken back by the Democrats.
It is likely. It's iffy
if the Senate will.
That's the thing that's still kind of confusing, isn't it? Because the Republicans
one in five
chance the Senate. Yeah.
as of today, right now.
Just hope Ted Cruz is out.
And that's going to be really interesting, you know, whether Ted Cruz is defeated by Beto or not. Mm-hmm. Beto O'Rourke.
So that's Texas, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The reason that is because, you know, Texas have been suffering so much under the Senate leadership of Ted Cruz.
Yeah. He's such an embarrassment. He's just a fool.
Yeah.
He's a fool, and he's a dangerous fool. He has nothing to stand for, and his whole campaign has been about how he's not Beto. And to me, it's like, you know, Beto O'Rourke is like, it's in a lot of ways, the future of leadership. He's very asset-oriented. Yeah. He's very kind and compassionate. Mm. And that's something definitely we need more in this world. Mm. And so, you know, worst case scenario, if Republicans take over everything, it's still not over. Mm. We still can make a difference. And stick around and fight.
There's plenty of rising star politicians who are being really visible and really, you know, who are pushing that and saying, you know, please keep going, hope, you know, like Cortez, you know, who's been
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez,
she's just like a powerhouse, Did you see that thing where she was like, I can't remember which, was it Jimmy Kimmel she was interviewed on, where they were like, she was like stood out like checking her phone after she was like she'd gone into the polls or something, and then like 19-year-olds are coming up and being like, we voted for you, and they've got their voting stickers, and like, the, you know, trying to get the youth vote is impossible, and there she is, like, you know, because she's only just turned 29 or something, or just turned 30, and like, she's getting all this youth vote. There's hope, there is light, there is optimistic intention here, there is stuff that's going on.
And that's the real thing, is like, is engaging with those youth, because you know what, kids, the future is yours. My mother's 93 years old, she's voting Republican. I don't know how many years she has left, but she's going to try and control your life for the next 50, 60 years.
I love my parents, but they both voted conservative, and I had a big discussion with them, you know, in the last time. I was like, you can't continue. Just, oh, Theresa May is not that bad. And I literally brought up her voting record because we have two, you know, both myself and my brother are gay. So it's like,
congratulations.
I know, right?
Do you guys ever fight over men?
No, we're fine. Because I don't want to say no. I'm done with that. I'm over it. I'm like, no man anymore. I'm done, unless they're paying me. then it's different. But
are you identifying as asexual or bisexual? Or?
Oh no, I just can't be bothered with dating.
you just swipe
I'm
right.
Just, yeah, I just
just stick your dick in the hole.
I'll just be here all night. I'm ready. I am the hole. I think like I showed them, you know, Theresa May's voting record. I was like, she's not for us. Mm-hmm. She absolutely is not. Like, and she consistently has voted against us in every part of legislation. And then they were both like, oh, you know, and I was like, no, okay, how much more clear can I make this? And I brought up the infamous picture, which I don't know if you've seen this.
No,
literally standing outside a school in was it 1970s or 80s, literally saying, get lesbian teachers out of schools. This is what we have. Literally, a Skeksis from the Dark Crystal wandered off set and took control of apartments. She is Skeksis and she knows it. Yeah. She is hunting down Gelflings at nighttime. She's like, smells like Gelfling. You know, that is literally her walking through. You know, she's literally out there doing this. She is like, they're cartoon villains, a bit like Rudy Giuliani. Mm-hmm. Like, Giuliani is a cartoon villain, like Nosferatu walking through trying to, you know, steal the bloodline of New York.
What's the name of the Skeksis who goes,
I can't remember the name.
Chamberlain.
Of them.
she's coming back, or they. Because the Skeksis are not. Don't have gender. So they're I guess a binary,
non-binary,
they're binary.
Didn't they divide themselves?
They're divided themselves. The Dark Crystal separated the good and the evil.
Right.
And then in the end of the film, spoiler alert, they get you reunited, and I'm like, so God is half Satan and half. good.
Isn't that just the meaning of nature?
I guess so.
So in other words, that the nature's concepts balanced. Don't exactly exist. It's just the two flip sides of the coin.
I think Jim Henson was smoking a little too much reefer when he wrote that script.
I mean, I still am on board with that film.
Or not enough.
I love that film.
It's a great film.
Yeah.
Half of it doesn't make any sense, but no. God damn it, I love it.
There's a follow-up coming, isn't there? Oh, no, that's
Netflix
Labyrinth.
Netflix is turning it into a miniseries with all live puppets.
Yes.
No CGI.
Yeah, yeah. Which will be fascinating.
Mm. Mm. And Chamberlain. It's basically Chamberlain's show.
Yeah, well, it's Theresa May. It's actually a documentary about Theresa May. And like, how did you come into existence? Mm, I found the crystal.
Did you ever, like, collect... Did you get into quartz crystals because of the film The Dark Crystal? Or?
No, but I do collect... I do have a healthy collection of them still. But that's just because, you know, which...
Gemstones are fun and pretty.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? When I was a kid, I got into, like, you know... Dungeons & Dragons, the cartoon, not realize it was based on the game.
Right.
Because I was a little, you know, square little kid growing up in Puerto Rico. I had nobody to play with. I was I was the kid from Stranger Things.
What, Bob?
No, the one
Justice
who went into
Barb.
Who went into the underworld, you know, all by myself. I was all alone, you know. So, so to me, it was like the Dark Crystal and all that stuff was really appealing.
How do you think I get into drag? I have to go into the underworld, and that's just how that begins.
You touch the gemstone, and you transform into
literally like one of those pieces of cut acrylic that I stick on my fingers. That's what happens. Like I go through to the other realm.
Well, Discharge, it's a pleasure.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Spend some time with your garbage family.
Thank you so much,
Ophelia Wilde.
Thank you so much.
Keep it wild.
I'm so glad you guys could, when you were here, stop by. It's always nice to have different accents and voices on the podcast and different perspectives.
What are you talking about, voices? He's made me angry. I'm talking like a queen again.
Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your generous support. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and listen to... a lot of shows.
Many, many years.
Decades worth of amazing podcasts, in-depth interviews with LGBT artists, nonconformists, and rebels of all shapes and sizes. Even Republicans. We've actually interviewed a few gay Republicans and even the most wicked witch of them all.
Who? Who's that?
Shirley Phelps from the Westboro Baptist
you
Church.
You interviewed Phelps? I've never heard
of
that.
It was actually one of the most famous interviews we've ever done back at the time. Yeah. They were like,
God, this it was years ago.
A very strange interview with Shirley Phelps.
I actually do a bit about her when I do my, because I'm mainly known for hosting. I do a bit about that. And I was like, I always thank our audience because it's important to thank your audience. And I always say, in the industry, you know, we like to thank our audience. Is because you're what keeps us going. We're what we call drag enablers, which means the Westboro Baptist Church hates you, and we love you for that. So it makes you good people. So,
well, Josh Kilmer Purcell, the winner of The Amazing Race, is also in that show, and we're
talking.
He introduced us to Shirley because they became friends.
They became friends.
Well, the thing is the weird thing about Shirley is like she believes in the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. But she's also a lawyer,
so
she also understands the Constitution and the laws of the United States. And she actually said, "I don't want the Bible used for making laws or something." It was kind of crazy, but basically she said,
really?
If you want to discriminate against gay people, which these religious people do, then you have to follow what the Bible says, which is first you have to imprison them and then you have to execute them, and if they're not willing to do that, then they can't use the Bible to discriminate against people. It's such a confusing family, you know what I mean?
Well, half the family left, didn't they? Because most of the daughters have all left.
Well, and what's kind of interesting too is they grew out of prominence because of Matthew. They went and protested Matthew Shepard's funeral, and because of that, we actually paid attention to Matthew Shepard. And then we had hate crime legislation, and he was most interned in the National Cemetery, right? Is that a cathedral or something in Washington, D.C.? Yeah, recently after 20 years.
Honey, it's always darkest before dawn. Shake it out. Follow the Garbage Family on social media.
# Garbage Fam. My name is Delighted Discharge on Instagram and Dis Space Charge on Facebook. And
Ophelia Wilde, Wilde with an E on the end. And that's Ophelia _Wilde7. on Instagram.
And no relationship to Oscar Wilde whatsoever.
I wish. But he is my, one of my all-time favorites. I have an Oscar Wilde quote on my ribs.
What's it say?
Lift up your shirt. I want to see. Oh, it's on your ribs. Oh. Sorry.
I'm going to.
Oh, wow. She's a performer.
She's actually giving that to us. I love it. We are all guilty.
In the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars.
Yeah.
Oh. That's a beautiful idea.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I can resist anything but temptation.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much
for having us.
Bye.
Bye.